Welcome to the Promises of the Constitution podcast.
Hello, this is Pamela Romney Openshaw, talking to you today about the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Two documents, legal documents, that work together as partners. So our national birth was a multi-staged process. First, we had the Declaration of Independence, which declared that we would be an independent nation. And then we had the Revolutionary War that made that stick. You can declare independence, but you have to do something to make that stick, and that's the purpose of the Revolutionary War. Then we had the Constitution written, which set our rules. And finally, the Federalist Papers explained the Constitution to enable ratification, so the people would know what the Constitution was all about, and they would be able to ratify this document. So Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, and in it he stated that the purpose was to dissolve the political bands that we had with Great Britain and establish our goal, which was a separate and equal status among the nations of the world. He stated that it was our right and, in fact, our duty to throw off government that doesn't work, and that we, as a people, had the responsibility to establish a new government that would do what we needed it to do to provide for our safety and our happiness. And he stated that this was done with serious consideration, not for light reasons. So the Declaration of Independence is a legally binding document designed to stand through centuries. We live in a world where legal status is essential in order for an entity to have validity. And so the Declaration of Independence had to establish our legal foundation for breaking as a nation and becoming our own independent nation. It was a document written by lawyers in language that would apply to all of the people, but that would be understood and respected in a legal sense by lawyers, by other lawyers. And so it uses legal terms, legal meanings, uses the legal language, it embodies the legal philosophy, and it establishes the appropriate power that a legal document needs to establish. Well, how did our founding fathers know to do this? Simple. Most of them were lawyers. Most of the names that you would recognize are lawyers. Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, James Madison, the father of the Constitution, Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, who was the first chief executive of the Supreme Court. All of those men were attorneys. Did you notice that George Washington was not included in that group? When you have an individual who's going to fight the Revolutionary War for you, you want him to be a military man, not an attorney, and so we are very grateful for the fact that George Washington was a military man. So if you're going to create a legal document, there are several requirements that have to be met, and the Declaration of Independence meets those requirements. A legal document has to establish the authority of the individuals involved. This is very important in resolving future disputes. And the Declaration of Independence established that the authority standing behind the Declaration was the laws of nature and of nature's God. In other words, it stated that it is not man's authority creating this document, but it was instead God's authority. And so, therefore, the nation that they will form will be subject to God's laws. This includes both physical and moral laws. Moral meaning, the best definition of moral really is knowing what is right and what is wrong and choosing to do what is right. So both physical and moral laws will be included under these legal requirements and under authority, stating that both physical and moral laws are not open to interpretation by the courts and by society. They are under the rule of God. We see this being changed in every way right now with humanism sweeping the world and replacing Christianity, where man's authority is being substituted for the authority of God. And in fact, as one author stated, the creation now controls the creator. This is one of the reasons that our law is being upended and our rights are no longer being protected. I discuss this in detail in Section 12 of Promises of the Constitution if you would like more information. Another requirement of a legal document and a requirement that the Declaration of Independence met was that it needs to register what the complaint is. It needs to state the lawful and legal grievances. The Declaration does that in great detail. There are more than 30 grievances listed that the colonists are addressing with Great Britain and with King George III. A legal document also needs to identify those that are bringing the charge, and it does that. It establishes the people. And it also needs to declare the intent of the document, as the Declaration does. It declares that our intent is to become independent. So the Declaration of Independence, then, this legally binding document, declared our independence, but it did not tell us what independence would look like. It did not tell us what the system of government would be. The Constitution does that. So the Constitution set the rules and established the system of law. It also established the authority under which this document would operate, and that authority was God's authority. We'll address this in a series of podcasts coming up very shortly on the Constitution as a Christian document, and I will show you the actual details on the authority of God being established in that document. But the Constitution also established that the law of America would operate under the rule of law, not the rule of rulers. The rule of law means that the law would be decided on in advance, that it would be solidified, that it would be placed in a document, that people would have the opportunity to ratify it, and that law would then be the operative system under which the nation would function, and that law would be sustained over a period of time. That's what the rule of law is. If they had established the rule of rulers, then the law would have changed every time a new set of rulers came into power. And that would be a non-rigid law and a non-protective law. And so whoever it was that came to power at the moment, whether it be a king, an oligarchy of a small group of powerful individuals, or, as we discussed in previous podcasts, whether it would be a democracy where the majority rule took away the rights of the minority rule, all of those are examples of rule by rulers, and they disregard the rights of all of the people. In fact, the rights of the people have little matter. It is only the rights of the rulers that count. So the Constitution then was the law that imposed requirements on the people and on the culture. And every law establishes right and wrong. In fact, if you look at the basis for the Constitution of the United States, you look to pull it down to one place, one fundamental aspect. That fundamental aspect is the Golden Rule. And I discuss that in Vignette 7.9 in Promises of the Constitution, if you'd like some additional information. There are people that say you cannot legislate morality. I would like to tell you that that is not the case. All law is inherently moral because it establishes what is right and what is wrong. For instance, fire codes, contracts drawn up between two people, speed limits, all of those kinds of law are all saying this is right and this is wrong. So every single law legislates morality. As we sometimes hear in the marketplace, we'll hear people say, all law legislates morality. If you say that you're not going to legislate morality, you mean that you're just not going to legislate one side of morality, and then the other side takes over. So if we don't legislate God's morality, we step back and we allow man's morality to slip into place there. Again, that's one of the reasons we are having so many problems. So the Constitution gives the what, the when, and the who of government, but it doesn't give us the reasons for that. It doesn't tell us the why and the how. So we have the Constitution establishing these great principles of equity, of equality, and fairness. But it doesn't say, okay, this policy that we're establishing right here is going to establish fairness. No, it doesn't say that. It was left to another of our great, we might even call it founding documents, to establish that. And that document is a conglomerate. It is called the Federalist Papers. And the Federalist Papers were written starting shortly after the Constitution was dispensed to the public so they could see it, and written for about the next 8 to 10 months in a series of 85 newspaper articles that were published in the state of New York newspapers and then circulated throughout the entire colonies. There were three individuals that wrote the Federalist Papers, and they were Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay. However, it was supposed to be equally divided at the beginning, but John Jay fell ill after writing just 5 or 6 of them, and so the other two had to pick up, mainly Alexander Hamilton had to pick up with that. So these newspaper articles were very extensive. In one of our books today in small print, they would be 6 pages long, and they were published 4 times a week for that period of 8 to 9 months. 85 of them, that was a massive undertaking, but in those contributions to the newspaper, these three men, all of whom were very familiar with the Constitution and what it embodied, explained the Constitution to the people. If you'd like additional information on this, I discuss it in vignette 6.1 in Promises of the Constitution. But these Federalist Papers, these 85 documents of the Federalist Papers, act as a resource, as a reference for us today, so that we can know what it was the Founding Fathers really had in mind. And these newspaper articles were critically important to explain to the American people what the founders had in mind when they put these particular principles into the Constitution. They explained it to the people and helped to solidify the ratification of the Constitution. Without those contributions, it's likely that the people of the United States would not have ratified the document. And so with their ratification, we have been given the best government that we have ever had in the modern world, perhaps the best government in the history of the world. Certainly, the Federalist Papers made a great contribution to that. I discuss the ratification process in an entire section in Promises of the Constitution, Section 6. Often in our history, we slide right past the concept of ratification and we just say, oh yeah, the Constitution was ratified. But no, this was the voice of the people accepting the document. It was a critical part of that process, and so I explain that in quite a bit of detail. To conclude this topic, there's a scripture in the book of Deuteronomy in the Bible. This is the prophet Moses talking to ancient Israel, but these words could be said by all of us who have had the opportunity to live under the Constitution today, especially if those who had the opportunity to live under the original Constitution, which was very much an inspired document, not so much the disfigured version that we have today, but we still have the best system of government operating in the world anywhere today. And so I want to share with you in conclusion this scripture from Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 8. And it says, "And what nation is there so great that hath statutes and judgments so righteous as all this law which I have set before you this day?" Surely Moses understood that the law of Moses that he had given the people was a profound system of government, and our Constitution, patterned after the law of Moses, is very much the same. Thanks for joining us today. See you again soon.
To have Pamela speak to your civic or church group, please call 801-373-0240 or email openshawenterprises@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to the Promises of the Constitution podcast. Be sure to go to Pam's website, promisesoftheconstitution.com, to purchase her books, DVDs, and her online educational courses available to watch on any electronic device.